Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Well, now WikiLeaks lays out the massive spying of the NSA and the CIA. The fear of all Americans, most that they have, that the fact that they're being monitored 24 hours a day appears to be true. Now, what are the implications on our freedom and to our freedom? We're going to talk about this in the first segment of the program today. And then we're going to go to the Middle East with our Middle East and prophecy expert, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, host of Prophecy Today. And we're going to pick up a couple of topics such as these. ISIS threatens to plant their flag on the soil of the United States, Russia, and China. That's right. That's what they're saying. Is it an idle threat or could it actually happen? Also not being covered much in the news is that tomorrow Benjamin Netanyahu meets with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Moscow to seek the preventing of a new terrorist state from developing in the Middle East. These critical topics and more today from a biblical and constitutional perspective here on Stand in the Gap Today. And with that, I welcome you. I'm Sam Rohr, and I'll be joined by David Kistler and Gary Dahl. And again, as I mentioned, our special recurring guest on everything Israel and the Middle East, prophetical and geopolitical analyst, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, host of Prophecy Today. Well, men, the WikiLeaks release is all over the news. The implications of this goes very deep and very broad. Guaranteed, it's going to cause a lot of consternation. There's going to be a lot of debate, and there's going to be a lot of investigation, I can assure you. People around the world are startled and engaging in a lot of discussion. Let me play, if I could, guys, just to get this thing started off here today, a short clip from Reuters News where they kind of sum up this issue and the impact of this information that's now evidencing what NSA and CIA have been collecting.
Amidst an ongoing battle between the White House and the U.S. intelligence community, WikiLeaks dropping a massive trove Tuesday. It claims details an array of hacking tools used by the Central Intelligence Agency to break into phones, apps, and smart TVs. In a lengthy press release not yet verified by Reuters, the organization headed by Julian Assange says one type of CIA malware apparently enables hackers to essentially take over a person's iPhone and monitor their text and audio communications, as well as use the phone's camera and microphone as a recorder, circumventing popular encryption apps such as Signal. Another malware attack against Samsung smart TVs, allowing hackers to put them into so-called fake off mode, where the user believes the television is off, but it is in fact on, and recording everything happening in the room. An eerie echo of George Orwell's novel, 1984. The controversial WikiLeaks redacting many names, emails, and IP addresses from its latest trove after receiving widespread criticism for its previous disclosure of such information. The CIA refusing to deny or confirm the authenticity of the documents, but WikiLeaks claiming they came from at least one source, saying the motive is to spark a public debate about whether the CIA is overstepping its mandated powers. An echo of NSA leaker Edward Snowden, whose own document dump led to major changes in how that agency operates.
Well, men, you can tell. I mean, this is only the start. There's the weight of these implications are extensive. Dave, let me go to you first and say, is that based on this information, is there not something inherently troubling to you when you know that it's possible for that iPhone that you carry in your hand, that I know you use a lot because I see you, could actually be the mechanism that government is using to track everything that you're saying and doing, or that Samsung TV that you think is off is really on and recording information that is being housed and sent to government databases? What do you think about that?
Well, Sam, let me say this. It's beyond deeply troubling. You know, years ago, my wife used to say this. How do you know, Dave, that that television that's in our dining room or it's in our sitting room, how do you know that that is not a monitoring device? And I used to laugh and joke and say there's no way that that's the case. But now this information coming out is once again, perhaps, gentlemen, proving that our wives are more correct than we would imagine that they are. But yes, Sam, this is very deeply, deeply troubling. If this kind of information is being acquired illegally, and people, the American public, are being monitored in that fashion. Deeply troubling.
Gary, let me go to you on this. I mean, the overall aspect that it is now technically possible to do these things, and even in this case, the CIA hasn't denounced it. And of course, they're saying they don't denounce or support or confirm. But there is a former NSA member who resigned some years ago, and I was looking at him, and he was confirming all of these things and said he got out because he could not be participant in spying on the American public. But Gary, when you take and you put this, the fact that a godless government, which really our government has become, no fear of God, no basis of truth that they're operating on, by and large, we've been seeing that when a government without these constraints begins to monitor conversations across the board, does that even become more problematic to you?
Oh, I think it does. I think what's more problematic is my fear now that our wives are listening after what David said about the fact that they know more than we thought we did. But no, it is problematic, Sam. And I think that in many, many ways, it's going to be used against us. Is it not true that it's both unconstitutional and illegal for this to be taking place? We have believed it for many years. We've thought about it for many, many years. You know, we've talked about the fact that there are certain satellites even up in the sky that can see what kind of mustard you have on your sandwich in your kitchen. And I think that we have probably only, well, I think we can only see the tip of the iceberg here. I think it goes a whole lot deeper, and it concerns me greatly, Sam, to be absolutely honest with you.
It concerns me too, Gary and Dave. And tomorrow on this program with our special guest, David New, constitutional attorney, we're going to be focusing more in depth on this matter of privacy, what the Constitution guarantees, all of that kind of thing, because this is a big issue. But Jimmy, in the last minute here, let me go to you and ask you to give a perspective on this, because, you know, from a biblical perspective, talk about what God is perceiving about our conversations, our thoughts, and is he recording them? And just kind of put it together from God's perspective. One thing, government doing it, another thing, God doing it. But talk about what we know about what God is collecting on what we say and think and do.
Well, Sam, in the book of Revelation chapter 1, a very prominent location to find out what Jesus Christ is like today. And it describes Jesus in his resurrected, glorified, soon coming body. His eyes were as a flame of fire. You exegete that, it's basically talking about X-ray vision. When you study the Word of God, you go to Genesis, you go to Psalms, you go to Job, you go to a number of locations we don't have time for, you'll see that the eyes of the Lord are upon every single one of us, plus his ears are upon us as well, and that means he's watching and listening to everything we do. Now, like the NASA is doing to maybe the American citizens, that's what God is doing. That really concerns me. I mean, it makes me wake up and pay attention. And remember, all of human government, God is using to direct his plan for the end times. If this is going to destroy our human government, this is going to be a bad situation as well. But do not forget, God is watching everything that happens.
And ladies and gentlemen, and that should make us stand up and do the right thing. And that was the point of that whole commentary. Not government, but the fear of God. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to come back after this break. We're going to go to the Middle East. We're going to talk and go to the city of Mosul that sits across from the historic city of Nineveh. And what's happening there with a great humanitarian crisis. We're going to talk to Jimmy about the latest updates there.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials
materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teacher's Editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible. In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold-embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
Known as the Great Dissenter because of his unconventional opinions, he served for 30 years on the Supreme Court. Who was he? Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., born this day, March 8, 1841. A Union soldier during the Civil War, he went on to become a Harvard law professor. In 1902, President Teddy Roosevelt appointed him to the Supreme Court, where he served to a more advanced age than any other justice. On his 90th birthday, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. replied to a reporter, "Young man, the secret of my success is that at an early age, I discovered that I was not God."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
Hi, this is Ken Souter, your host for Biblically Speaking, a program designed to build a biblical worldview one program at a time. Join me every other Thursday from 7 to 8 a.m. right here on 1180 WFYL AM. You can email any questions to me at info@1180WFYL.com or call 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-8255.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
We're going to go now to the Middle East, as I said before the break, and specifically to the city of Mosul. Mosul sits on the west side of Tigris River. It's right across the river from the ancient city of Nineveh. A very, very historic location, and it's historic now because that's where ISIS has pledged to fight to the death. And it appears that, that there is an absolute humanitarian crisis occurring there. And Jimmy, I'd like to go to you right now and ask you to bring us up to date, give us a most recent view of what's really happening there. The pictures that I've seen with bombed out buildings, debris littered streets, and disaster is really, really hard to view. Tell us what's happening there, please.
Well, as they are saying right now, this is the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, not only in the Middle East, in the world in the last two decades. What's happening is, as you just mentioned and described geographically, you have the biblical site of Nineveh on the eastern side of the Tigris. You cross the river, and their people, the military forces of Iraq, of Iran, and of the Kurds, have been able to take those bridges crossing the Tigris River, come into what we consider in the Middle East as Western Mosul, and there you have about 750,000 civilians that live in the large city of Mosul. They are surrounded by Islamic State, but then beyond that, the outer circle has to be the military forces of Iraq with their compatriots as they're trying to drive Islamic State out. Remember, Mosul was captured by Islamic State. After Islamic State started in Syria and Raqqa, they moved in across the border into Iraq. They went to Mosul. It was an oil-rich area. They started selling the oil that they extracted out of the ground on the black market, basically to the European Union, back market prices. Then they robbed the banks. They became the best financed terrorist organization in the world. Now Islamic State is caught in the crossfires. They don't know which way to go. It looks like they may have to fight to the death. The Islamic State commander has left that area, gone out, and is now broadcasting to the rest of the world as they use social media to do that, as they have in the past. But in addition, inside of Western Mosul, they are using these civilians as human shields. In addition to that, they're using both automobile and truck bombs, suicide bomb attacks. They're using individuals in suicide attacks upon the people of Mosul. They're going after the military forces, trying to take over. It's been a long time coming for this to reach this point in the battle, and it's only getting worse and worse. The humanitarian crisis, as we've already said, is the worst it's ever been in years. There's no food going into the people. This is a bad situation right now in Mosul, and it's not going to get better until and if the Iraqi military, joined with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they have come in to assist the Iraqi military of al-Baghdadi, who was the prime minister of Iraq. And they've been joined by the Kurds, and the Kurds have a special interest in fighting because this was a part of what they claim to be Kurdistan. It's no longer an official state, but they would like it to be. The Kurds want this piece of real estate, not only because of its financial availability with the oil and et cetera, but it's strategic, where most of the Kurds are living to set up a state in that oil-rich, very wealthy piece of real estate. Mm-hmm.
Jimmy, that's some good insight, and I appreciate you sharing that with us, with our listeners. But, let's focus a little bit on ISIS and Mosul. Surrender is not only something ISIS does not know how to do. They don't want to do it. And they are vowing to fight to the death and take everyone with them if needs be. Now, a jihadi Islamic fixation on death and destruction is satanic in every way. We understand that from John chapter 10 and verse 10 in reality. But what are you hearing on the ground is the motivating factor on ISIS fixation on fighting to the death in Mosul? What is there for them to do that?
Well, you're right, Gary. It's not a part of their vocabulary to talk about surrender. So instead of surrender, they're talking about fighting to the death. That'd be martyrdom. Of course, that takes them to the seventh heaven if they die as a martyr, according to the Quran. They believe Allah. They believe that this is a part of his plan. You've got to understand the plan of the Islamic world is to have a worldwide caliphate under Allah, and everybody would be subject unto the Islamic faith. Everybody would be converted to Islam. And so this must be something that has to happen. Many of the warriors are coming out and say, wait a minute, I thought the caliphate was already set up. Mosul was the capital of the caliphate, but that does not seem to be the case. So Allah must have a different plan. And if we have to be martyrs, this is only to our benefit to be able to go into the seventh heaven and come back. And we will be able to come back with the Mahdi and rule this caliphate of the world because we are heroes in the Islamic faith. Now, what I'm just talking to you about, Gary, I'm sure you recognize, this is all a part of Islamic eschatology. And we have to understand that's what's driving these people. It's not that they want Mosul. It's not that they want to have a worldwide caliphate as much as it is that their eschatology according to Allah, according to Muhammad, according to the modern day futurist, as far as the Islamic faith are concerned, is that they would have this, and this is simply one step down the road to accomplishing their goal.
Dr. Jimmy, let me ask you this. While it certainly appears as if ISIS and radical jihadist Islam is suffering some, you know, weakening perhaps, and certainly some facing some potential defeats there in Iraq, they seem to be doing anything but weakening worldwide. In fact, they are threatening, ISIS is, to plant a flag in the United States, in Russia, and in China. Now, that's a bold, bold statement on the part of ISIS. Is there any legitimacy to their ability to do that? Are they strong enough outside of Iraq globally to be able to make that happen?
David, they are. It's a legitimate tribe that they're going to put in place, because let's just think about a couple of things, for example. Islam is everywhere. It's not only in the Middle East. As we've watched and observed over the last decade, we've seen Islam, especially since 9/11, Islam become power-incited to be able to control the world. When you attack the number one superpower of the world and are victorious, according to their perception, then you're capable of doing anything you would like to do, and you believe Allah is standing by you. And if you have Islamic warriors all across this world, you're set to make that happen. You know, think about it for a moment. The largest population of Muslims is not in the Middle East. It's actually in India, with over 350 million Muslims in India. And when you look at China, the population in China is unbelievable. So they're able, and they are already training to take over China and become and make that become a part of their caliphate. Hello, Russia. Do you not remember Chechnya, which is an Islamic stronghold? If you know any demographics about Russia, you'll know that, and I've read these. I'm not sure how reliable they are, but by the year, within the year 2020, about 75% of the Russian military will be of the Islamic faith. Russian Orthodoxy is falling by the wayside. Islam is coming on very, very strong. And then in America, hey, we've talked about it all the time, how Islam is spreading across America, how the threat to America, the cells that are within Iran has already cells set up in very strategic locations in America. So Islam is ready to take power here. I believe it's going to be very viable that they can plant a flag in China, in Russia, and in America. Now, that's the plan, and it's for both factions of the Islamic world, the Shiites and the Sunnis. The Shiites, about 15% of the Islamic population, basically Iran and all of their connections to these Islamic terror groups, but the Sunnis would be the rest of them. Both of their eschatologies are focused on a worldwide caliphate. They believe that is going to happen. And so they believe anything that's going on now is simply setting the stage. Remember, the Shiites believe a worldwide catastrophe has to take place that'll bring back the Mahdi. Those who are in that part of the world, they're training today in the Middle East to come back to their homelands to set up and build this caliphate.
Well, Jimmy, that's a remarkable thing. I mean, again, I'm just going to repeat again what they're saying. They want to plant a flag, basically saying they want to take over in the three largest countries of the world, most powerful, Russia, the United States, and China. And you just laid out a scenario that, Jimmy, that I don't think a lot of people really understand, and that is the fact that they have a presence in these three countries. And I thought it was significant that you said about the military makeup in Russia as an indication of where and how they are working. Jimmy, when intelligence is saying that they have actually strengthened in the last 5 years, when all of the effort has been on the fighting on the ground in the Middle East, you wonder whose strategy is really superior here.
Well, we have to believe that Islam has a overall plan to pull all of this together. They're not concerned about life. They're not concerned about who has to die in order for something to be accomplished. They would soon shoot somebody in the head and get them out of the way to accomplish their goal, or they're willing to be martyrs. In fact, there's some television programs indicating that if you watch them, and I don't know how much we can believe, but we're seeing some focus on Islam, how they believe that they have to take over America. They have to do these things in order to accomplish their ultimate goal. And when you're training them in the Middle East, spreading them across the world, all that network is ready to accomplish their ultimate goal.
Hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go next after the break. We're going to go stay in the Middle East. We're going to go with Benjamin Netanyahu, and we're going to travel with him to Moscow, where he is meeting tomorrow with Vladimir Putin. You'll be surprised about one of the primary reasons why he's going there, and it is to help prevent the formation of a new terrorist state. That's right, a new terrorist state. That's what they believe may happen. We're going to talk to Jimmy DeYoung about that when we come back.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom, shining light throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom, shining light from Philly to the nations. 1180 shining forth, we are the Freedom Station. WFYN.
News Radio. I'm Lillian Wu. Some lawmakers squaring off on the GOP plan to replace Obamacare, which has the full support of the president.
President Trump is very confident about the passage of the American Health Care Act.
Counselor to the president, Kellyanne Conway on Fox, saying the president is open to ideas. Two House committees holding sessions on the proposal.
The Trump administration is trying to win over hardline conservatives skeptical of a plan that includes tax breaks to help people buy health insurance. Some lawmakers who believe the tax break are an entitlement program are coming forward with their own plans. The president will meet with conservatives today as he works to close the replacement plan.
Fox Radio's Rachel Sutherland. And thousands of firefighters in Kansas battling blazes which have destroyed up to 1,000 square miles. Officials say the number of choppers dumping water on the fires will increase today because of calmer winds. Fox News, we report. You decide.
A nation of well-informed men who have been taught to know and prize the rights which God has given them cannot be enslaved. It is in the region of ignorance that tyranny begins. A quote from Benjamin Franklin.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. Some people are better than others at planning ahead, and I obviously don't know about your practices in that regard. But for those of you that do plan ahead and are already laying out your summer calendar, let me encourage you to put our City on the Hill Youth Leadership and Worldview Conference for high school teens on your calendar this summer. This life-changing event takes place the week of July 23rd through the 29th and features some of the best worldview and apologetics teachers in the world and includes 2 days at our state capitol building with the teens serving as mock senators and debating actual legislation on the Senate floor. If you'd like to see your teen or one that you know infused with a deep Christian worldview, gain godly friends, and see God unlock their hidden leadership skills, City on the Hill is the right place. For details, go to our website at pafamily.org, or you can call Dan at our office at 1-800-FAMILY-1. That's 1-800-FAMILY-1.
The citizens of America are, from this period, to be considered as actors on a most conspicuous theater, which seems to be designated by Providence for the display of human greatness and felicity. 1783, John Adams.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Tomorrow, Benjamin Netanyahu and Vladimir Putin are scheduled to meet in Moscow. Now, significant about this is that this is to be the fifth meeting, number five, one, two, three, four, five, the fifth meeting between these two men in just the last year and a half. Significant, I don't think, however you look at that. And I haven't seen a whole lot in the U.S. press about this, but we're going to go to Jimmy here right now. Jimmy, I want to ask you about this because there are, according to some reports from out of Israel, that are suggesting that a primary reason for the meeting is that Bibi Netanyahu is trying to go there to talk with Vladimir Putin to head off the creation of a new terror state in Syria. A new terror state in Syria. Can you share with us what Israel's fear is and a little bit more about the details of this, please?
Sam, several thoughts we need to consider. Number one, there's been a Syrian civil war going on for the sixth year now. Over 700,000 of the Syrians have been killed in this civil war. A couple of years ago, Russia came in, put their presence militarily there. They have a naval base on the Mediterranean coast. They have an Air Force base. They have their troops on the ground there. They've been joined by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. They're a major force there. Hezbollah, the surrogate terrorist organization from Iran, located in southern Lebanon. They've come across the border into Syria. They stood alongside Bashar Assad to go after this rogue element of what we would have to consider radical Islamist groups who want to defeat Bashar Assad, take him down, and replace him with what everybody is considering as Islamic State. That's the only reason they want to take him down. And remember, as you look at it geographically, all of this happening at Israel's northern border, there's no buffer state between Israel and Syria. The borders come together there in the Golan Heights. That's how close all of this activity across the border in Syria is taking place. In fact, the Israeli Defense Force and some of their jets have had sorties going into southern Syria. They've been able to hit areas near Damascus. They've also absolutely not wanting to infuriate the Russians, but they've hit some of the Russian targets that are there in the Golan Heights. On the Syrian side, you've got all the radical terrorist organizations. In addition, you have Bashar Assad's military forces and the Russian soldiers along with Hezbollah standing there in the Golan Heights. Now, this should scare anybody to death. If you understand that Bashar Assad says, I'm going to take the Golan Heights back one way or the other, either politically, diplomatically, or militarily, it looks like they're setting the stage to take it back militarily. And the Israeli Defense Force understands that, so they have massed at their northern border, especially with the border of Syria, a number of Israeli Defense Force soldiers. They have their armored units up there. They're ready to deal with the situation. They're concerned that if indeed the Iranians continue to make their presence known and effective in Syria, and they have no desire, the Iranians have no desire of leaving Syria at this point in time. They are only digging in to entrench in the area. That would be a Iranian Islamic state at the northern end of Israel's border, and there they would come right into the Golan Heights and have access to the entire body politic of the state of Israel.
Jimmy, let me ask you this. Moving away from Syria to Iran, Iran, of course, has been for a number of weeks now intimidating our warships. And then just recently, Benjamin Netanyahu said that 80% of all of Israel's military threats are coming from Iran. I'm curious if you can provide any information as to whether Israel itself or some combination of an Israeli-U.S. encounter with Iran is imminent.
Well, they are ready right now to go. Let me just give this rule of thumb, Dave. Here's the statement that I have to say. If Israel is talking about it, don't worry about it. It's not going to happen in the near future. If they are not talking about a preemptive attack on Iran and the development of that nuclear weapon of mass destruction, be ready at any moment that could happen. Now, a couple of thoughts. Just a couple of days ago, Prime Minister Netanyahu met with the President of the United States. One of the things they mentioned in their public press conference that they held together was Iran and the threat they are. You have to understand that there's no way Israel is going to go with the Trump administration in place without their approval, without the promise of support if they go in there. And then when you put that together with the fact that Netanyahu, as we just mentioned a moment ago, is going to meet with Vladimir Putin in Moscow controlling all the entities that are in Syria right this time, I'm sure Vladimir Putin, as conniving as he is going to try to find out from Netanyahu, hey, what did you guys say there in the United States, and what do we need to be considering as it relates to the continuing ongoing civil war in Syria? So you got to realize that Iran is going to be a part of that scenario. And in fact, when you look at the scriptures, and that's where I always have to go, they're a part of the coalition. You go to Ezekiel chapter 38, there, verse 5, referred to as Persia. Persia, of course, is modern-day Iran, and they're a part of the Jewish life for centuries now. And what they are doing is they're going to see that what could happen is that this could incite the entire Islamic world to form that coalition that's going to try to go against the Jewish state of Israel. Remember Psalm 83 and verse 4 says they go together, they have a conference meeting, they come out of the meeting and they say, let's wipe Israel off the face of the earth, that her name be forgotten forever. You got to remember, if your enemy's my enemy, we join forces to wipe out our enemy.
Jimmy, you know, talking about Iran and or Persia of old, as we know it, this weekend marks the famous Jewish days of Purim that goes back to the days of the Persian king, Queen Esther, Mordecai, and Haman. And I think that in light of what we were talking about here, it might be a good time to make the comparisons between Persia of old and Iran of the 21st century. And I don't know anybody else in the world who could do that any better than you. How about doing it?
Okay, Dave, Gary, I'll be happy to. Let's go back just a bit before in history as it relates to Persia and the Jewish people. In the book of Ezra, chapter 1, and had been prophesied by Isaiah 44 and 45, God was going to raise up a Persian leader. His name would be Cyrus. He would be the servant of God to allow the Jewish people to return to the land after the Babylonian captivity, because remember, the Medes and the Persians defeated the Babylonians, allowing the Jews to be able to go back home. 50,000 of them returned with the help of and at the direction of Cyrus, who was the king of Persia. He, in fact, even contributed to the rebuilding of the temple. And in the first six chapters of the book of Ezra, you can see that happening. The temple's rebuilt. They have the dedicatory service there in chapter 6. Now, that's Persia. But then, four kings later, when you get to the book of Esther, Ahasuerus is the fourth of the Persian kings. He was far more influential than any of the previous kings and richer than all four previous kings. He was married to Vashti. He puts her away because she doesn't want to obey him. He marries Esther. He doesn't know it. She's a Jewess. She has a cousin named Mordecai. He won't bow to Haman, who's the villain of Esther. Haman comes along, convinces the king, we got to get rid of these Jews. They put together a plan, the law of the Medes and the Persians, to wipe out the Jews. And it had it not been that time in history, Esther came on the scene, she was able to go in and meet her husband, King Ahasuerus, convince him that the Jews should not be killed. And, of course, Haman dies on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Now, I talk about Persia after the Babylonian captivity, Persia at the time of Esther, Persia today, which is mentioned in Ezekiel 38:5, until 1936, known as Persia, speaking the Persian language, even today, is now known as Iran. And we're watching all of this unfold in our world, and what we see happening is, well, Iran is the nation that brought about the Islamic Revolution. Remember, 1979, after Jimmy Carter helped bring down the Shah of Iran, the Ayatollah Ali Khomeini returned from Paris and he established the Islamic Republic. He established the Islamic Revolution. It woke up that sleeping giant of Islam headquartered in Persia. And now we're seeing it all develop as they develop a nuclear weapon of mass destruction, which brings us up to today. We're standing at the edge of history that was pre-written by the ancient Jewish prophets about to be fulfilled.
Well, Jimmy, that is a great, great update. Now, when we look at Persia now, I mean, when you look at Iran right now, they actually are controlling a part of Iraq. But original Persia went over, did it not, into Afghanistan? Do you see all of the geographical original Persia coming back prophetically under the rubric of a modern-day Iran or modern-day Persia?
I sure do, Sam, because I said in 1936 they changed their name from Persia to Iran. I should have also added Afghanistan and Pakistan were a part of that geographical location that was known as Persia. So now you have the three states, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran. Hello, that starts the list of a coalition of nations mentioned in Ezekiel 38, Psalm 83, Daniel chapter 11. That's the coalition that's going to come in the first 6 months of the tribulation period after the rapture to attack the Jewish state and wipe them off the earth. That's when God intercedes and wipes out all these Persians and all of their compatriots when they try to destroy the Jewish state.
I tell you, ladies and gentlemen, you do not get the kind of analysis of the news of the day like you do on this program. We want you to pray for us. We want you to help us. We are a listener-supported program. Go to our website, give comments, give questions. We'll try to cover it on the program. Help us in every way that you can so that this kind of news and information can continue to go forth. Our website, standinthegapradio.com, is where you can go. Pick up the archives and you can leave your comments there. Now, when we come back after this break, we're going to now focus on the matter of the Palestinians. And the Palestinians are up to no good as well as what's happening there in Syria. We're going to talk to Jimmy about what the latest news is about the Palestinians.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well-written, grade-level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Your child deserves the best. Shouldn't that include an exceptional education? PA Leadership Charter School is a kindergarten through 12th grade online public school serving students across Pennsylvania. Voted number one cyber school in PA, PA Leadership Charter School provides a flexible but structured approach to education. Visit PALCS.org or call 1-877-725-2785 to learn more. That's PALCS.org. PA Leadership Charter School is training tomorrow's leaders today.
Young Winston struggled in school. He failed the entrance exam twice before entering Britain's military academy. His early success in politics gave way to midlife failure. And in the mind of the public, his career was ended. Of course, we all know Winston Churchill went on to become England's Prime Minister during World War II. But did you know that, after the war, voters tossed him out of office, despite his wartime leadership and popularity? This is Howard Butt Jr. of Laity Lodge. Churchill's career reminds us that early failure cannot predict future success. Neither can present success guarantee the future. The best thing, the only thing, is to do your best, be your best in each moment in the high calling of our daily work.
Learn more at thehighcalling.org.
Never give in. Never give in.
Winston Churchill's words stirred his country in the face of defeat.
Never, never, never.
Today they inspire us to reach for our own victories. Commitment. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap today.
Well, we've already been covered a great deal of content on the program here. When you talk about Israel, they have Iran to the north. Benjamin Netanyahu's saying about 80% of the threats against Israel coming from Iran. We just talked about the whole developing influence of Iran into the old Persia. We're just talking about the fear of Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel that there could be a terrorist state actually coming out of the situation in Syria. Enemies literally all around. But there's one that's been there for a long time, and that is that's the Palestinian state led by Mahmoud Abbas. And it appears, Jimmy, that they are, in some respects, preparing themselves for war. Several terrorist organizations are urging Abbas to end all security agreements that he has with Israel. And in my words, effectively saying, get rid of these entanglements so we can go to war with them. My question to you, do you see Abbas and the Palestinian state there in the security agreements, if they break them, do you see that in essence the same thing as really preparing for an all-out engagement of war with Israel?
Sam, before I answer that question, let me just be picky for a moment. I'm not trying to embarrass you at all, but there's no such thing as a Palestinian state.
I made a mistake. You are correct. I don't want you to embarrass me. I made a mistake. I'll confess right up front. Not a Palestinian state. That's what the UN is wanting to create. They want to create a Palestinian state and a Israeli state alongside. I didn't mean to say that. You are correct for clarifying it. Thank you.
Well, and the only reason I said that is that has been said so many times, which is a lie, that the world is believing that, and that's a part of the entire problem in the Middle East. Now, to this point in the broadcast, we've been talking about external threats to the Jewish state of Israel. Now we've come to the point of talking now about the internal threats, and that would have to be the Palestinian people. Is it a possibility that they are ready to go to war? The answer is yes. Are they moving to end that security agreements that they have, the Palestinians, with the Israelis? The answer is yes. They are threatening to do that. Some have already believed that may well have already happened. I cannot tell you for sure, but they're threatening to make that happen. Basically, technically, it's not been, I believe, set in place, but practically, it is already in place. Now, can the Palestinians defeat the Israelis? They have not done this as of yet. And one of the reasons is that the Israeli Defense Force has not gone at full power against their threats of Hamas in the southern part of Israel, nor Hezbollah and the others. Well, they're not in Israel as much as we're talking about Fatah in the middle part of the state. But Avigdor Lieberman, who is now the defense minister, and as we speak, meeting at the Pentagon with the military leaders of America in Washington, D.C., he's made the statement, we're going full force. You want to fight Israel again? He's talking to Hamas. He's talking to Fatah there under Mahmoud Abbas. He says, if you want to go against us, you better be ready, because this time we're not going to quit the fight until we see you raise the white flag. The Palestinians would lose if they go against the Israeli Defense Force. I got to tell you, Sam, there's going to be a lot of loss of life. The world is going to rise up against this situation, even though Israel may be in the right because they're simply defending themselves. And when the world rises up, the Islamic world, 1.7 billion people, and all the nations, 57 different Islamic nations, are going to join to go after the Jewish state of Israel. They're not going to stand by, because the Palestinians control their third most sacred piece of real estate, the Temple Mount, in the Jewish state for the Islamic world. The Islamic world is going to rise up. They're going to go after them. And we're talking about what we've already mentioned, the Ezekiel 38 war coming into place.
You know, Jimmy, again, we certainly do appreciate your information that you share with our listeners. But here's an interesting point. That unknown to most people is the fact that certain Palestinian groups actually had and used Facebook, but they closed it down and now they've reopened it. From your opinion, from your position, is that a good move or a dangerous move?
It has to be, Gary, a very, very dangerous move. And it was not only some of the Palestinian groups, it was the main Palestinian Authority, which is the legitimate representative of the Palestinian people in all of these peace talks and all negotiations that goes on, the ones who speak at the United Nations, etc., under Mahmoud Abbas. And so they had this Facebook site. They were using it, and then it was shut down automatically by the Facebook people. They said they were not meeting the norms that were required for Facebook. A couple of days later, it was reopened, and the ironic thing is they came back with the same propaganda, the same incitement on Facebook for the reason that they took down Facebook. And they're calling for the Jews to rise up and, I'm sorry, the Palestinians to rise up and kill the Jewish people, which is what Ezekiel 35 says. They're going to kill and then they're going to steal their land. This is the plan that the Palestinian people have been using through social media. You know, all the terrorist organizations in the world use social media. Palestinians are on the same page in the use of social media. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're training their children up to hate the Jews, to kill the Jews, showing them how to go about doing it. You can look on Facebook. You can see short videos of how the children are learning to do all these types of things. Facebook is joined forces. I don't know if they've done it willingly or not, but they've joined forces with the enemy of the Jewish state, the Palestinians, who want to rid the world of the Jewish state of Israel. They're being used now. They need to shut it down immediately. And by the way, this is all documented through friends of mine, Itamar Marcus, who heads up the Palestinian Media Watch. They monitor the print media, the electronic media. He is coming to Washington next week to meet with the members of the United States Congress, the United States Senate, and brief them about what's going on in the Islamic world, the use of social media, the use of Facebook and all of their media to incite the Palestinians to wipe out the Jewish state of Israel.
Jimmy, that's great information, and I know we just have a little bit left, and I want to ask you to end up closing the program in prayer for us today, as we try to do every day, but perhaps in 1 minute here that you would have. Who is the strongest ally right now of Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinians, and if they threaten to do what they are, who's going to be there with them to give them support first off?
Iran has to be the number one partner with the Palestinians. They've given them the munitions. I've seen the GRAD missiles in Eshkelon, Israel, that were fired out of the area of the Gaza Strip. And so they have fired into Israel. They have supplied them with all the military armament they need. They've sent thousands of the Palestinian Islamic terrorists over to Tehran to train over there. All of these things are being backed up by Iran. Iran wants a presence in the heart of Israel, and it looks like Mahmoud Abbas would make that happen.
Excellent. Take us to the Lord in prayer, if you could, Jimmy.
Lord, you understand what we've been talking about. It's not new to you. You knew it was going to happen. You put the ancient Jewish prophets in a place where they had to write about it. We are now reading in the newspaper what the ancient prophets wrote in the Bible many years ago, and we see that scenario unfolding. We pray that this will excite Christians about the reality of the soon coming of the rapture of the church, but also to challenge us to get out there and win people to Jesus Christ. That's the only reason he has not come. Lord, use us for your glory as we understand your plan, in Jesus' name.
Amen. Amen. Thank you, Jimmy, Gary, and Dave. Thanks for being on the program today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for staying with us and being with us today. Talk to your friends and your enemies, too. Ask them to come and listen to this program. Maybe God will speak to their hearts. And with that, we ask you to stand in the gap for truth where you are. Join us tomorrow, 23 hours for today. We'll be right back.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.AmericanPastorsNetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap Today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Live from beautiful West Norriton Township. This is AM 1180.